Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording in our studio at the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today on our Capitol Report, we'll have some big news about a court decision that has put the brakes on the Obama administration's immigration reforms, at least for now. We'll also tell you about a remarkable resolution passed by California's legislature regarding immigration. From the Middle East, hear about the latest shocking crimes against humanity committed by ISIL and about retaliation launched by Egypt. If you're a smoker, be sure to listen to our health report today. It turns out that smoking is even worse than you thought. And speaking of smoke, firefighters saved the life of a Pine Valley man trapped in a fire, and we'll have all the details. Also learn why Fox News in San Diego is in the national media spotlight for an embarrassing error. Plus, hear about a drive-by shooting in Spring Valley that remains unsolved, and the sheriff is seeking tips from the public to find the suspects responsible. We'll also tell you about local firefighters' boot drive coming up soon. And today we'll be re-airing our newsmaker interview with John Hartley on his efforts to bring clean elections to San Diego. On Destination East County, we'll have some top events coming up for you, from Black History Month film showings at local college campuses to a St. Patrick's Day run in downtown El Cajon. On Bookshelf, hear from author Don Harrison about his new book, Schlepping Across the West, There's a Jewish Story Everywhere. And then get some heart health tips during February's Heart Health Month. Plus, hear why the UT San Diego newspaper is being sued. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine show, because East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Ed Barreno with the Capitol Report. The White House says it will appeal a ruling issued by a federal judge in Texas who issued a preliminary injunction blocking President Obama's executive actions on immigration from being implemented until a lawsuit filed by Texas and numerous other states works its way through the courts. The suit claims that the president overreached his constitutional authority by taking executive actions to protect millions of undocumented immigrants from deportation. Now eligible immigrants who were set to apply for new programs starting February 18th will be unable to do so. One program would allow undocumented immigrants who came to the U.S. as children to stay here and work legally. Another would offer similar protections for parents of U.S. citizens or legal permanent residents. Countering the 12 states that filed the lawsuit seeking to overturn the president's executive orders, attorneys general from 12 other states and the District of Columbia had signed an amicus brief asking the judge not to issue the injunction. The judge has not issued a ruling on whether or not the president's actions are legal, which will be up to another judge hearing the lawsuit in the future to decide. The White House says it will appeal the ruling, issuing a statement that reads in part, "The district court's decision wrongly prevents these lawful, common-sense policies from taking effect, and the Department of Justice has indicated that it will appeal the decision," the White House said. The ruling could have an impact in Congress, where Republicans have been blocking a funding bill for Homeland Security unless Obama's immigration reforms were repealed. Now some analysts say Republicans may pass the bill since a judge has blocked the president's executive orders, at least until the outcome of the lawsuit or a decision by an appellate court. The judge's decision leaves millions of undocumented immigrants and their families in limbo, forced to remain in the shadows for the foreseeable future.
A clear partisan divide separates Congress on immigration issues. But in a rare show of bipartisan unity, California's state Senate unanimously has approved a strongly worded resolution asking Congress to provide undocumented immigrants with a path to citizenship. Chris Genewine, editor at Times of San Diego, observes, "The language of the resolution is gracious and magnanimous in marked contrast to the anti-immigrant, anti-Hispanic venom on talk radio, in internet chat rooms, and even sometimes in the halls of the nation's capital. The resolution cites reasons showing why the senators believe undocumented immigrants deserve an opportunity to become citizens. Here are some of the reasons listed. This country was built by immigrants seeking a better life. Immigrants are a vital and productive part of our state's economy. They also represent a large share of our new small business owners and create economic prosperity and needed jobs for everyone. Keeping these families, business owners, and hard workers in the shadow of society serves no one. Comprehensive immigration reform should include a reasonable and timely path to citizenship for undocumented immigrants who are already living and working in the United States. Immigration enforcement should continue to focus on criminals, not on hardworking immigrant families. Reform should offer permanent residency opportunities to international students in American universities who are highly trained and in high demand. The resolution was passed at the same time Republicans in Congress are threatening to shut down the Department of Homeland Security by the end of February, refusing to fund the agency unless President Obama's immigration reforms are repealed. California's resolution was authored by a Republican, Senator Andy Vidak from California's Central Valley. He says the message to congressional members is clear, that the time is now to work together to address an issue that's been ignored for more than 25 years. California has the largest number of undocumented immigrants of any state in the nation, but legislatures in both parties now agree that deporting 11 million people is both unrealistic and inhumane to families that would be torn apart. Instead, California's Republican and Democratic senators agree that offering an opportunity to earn citizenship is a more fair and viable solution. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Egypt has launched airstrikes at Islamic State or ISIL jihadists in Libya, CNN reports. The attacks are in retaliation for ISIL claims of killing 21 Egyptian Christians, including approximately a dozen whose beheadings were shown in the latest gruesome video released by ISIL. Mark Arabo, a national spokesman for Iraqi Chaldean Christians here in San Diego, issued a statement to media voicing concerns for other Christians in the wake of the murders, denouncing ISIL for conducting Christian genocide. He says, the Iraqi Chaldean Christian community mourns the loss of our 20 Christian brothers at the hands of ISIL. The fact that these killings took place outside of the strongholds of Syria and Iraq show that ISIL seems to be growing in strength and expanding their reach. The beheadings of these Christians remind us that we are all targets, and that without strong international pressure, the senseless killings of mass amounts of Christians will persist in what is now a Christian genocide. The Egyptian Christians were from poor areas of their country, and they had gone to Libya seeking work, but were kidnapped from Sirte, a city on the coast of Libya. On Egyptian state television, the Egyptian military broadcast this statement, "Avenging Egyptian blood and punishing criminals and murderers is our right and duty." A recent escalation of provocations by ISIL is prompting retaliation by Arab nations. Jordan made retaliatory bombings of ISIL targets after ISIL released a video showing a Jordanian pilot burned alive by ISIL jihadists. The United States has condemned the latest killings as barbarism. President Obama has asked Congress for war powers to go after ISIL without geographic boundaries, primarily through airstrikes, though also with limited use of ground forces for hostage rescues, intelligence operations, and targeted attacks on ISIL leaders. Congress has yet to act on the president's request. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
However bad you thought smoking was, it's even worse, according to a study reported on by the New England Journal of Medicine. Nearly 1 million smokers over the age of 55 had their health histories followed for 10 years. The journal report says, in addition to the well-known hazards of lung cancer, artery disease, heart attacks, chronic lung disease, and stroke, the researchers found that smoking was linked to significantly increased risks of infection, kidney disease, intestinal disease caused by inadequate blood flow, and heart and lung ailments not previously attributed to tobacco. This could mean the number of people who die every year attributable to smoking is significantly higher than current estimates. The study funded by the American Cancer Society found that 83% of untimely natural deaths in smokers were from one of the 21 diseases known to be caused by smoking. But what about the other 17%? According to the New York Times, mortality among current smokers is 2 to 3 times as high as that among persons who never smoked. Even though people are already barraged with messages about the dangers of smoking, researchers say it's important to let the public know that there is yet more bad news. Ruling out death by unnatural means, the study found a statistical link to an abundance of other possible ways smoking cigarettes is the same as driving nails in your coffin. It only makes sense that there is a biological link to these new findings because smoking can weaken the immune system, increasing the risk of infection of all kinds, all of which can lead to kidney problems. Obviously, lung damage from smoke combined with increased vulnerability to infection can lead to multiple respiratory illnesses. Coronary artery disease can also choke off the blood supply to the intestines. The conclusion of the study? These associations should be investigated further and, when appropriate, taken into account when the mortality burden of smoking is investigated. The conclusion of the study? These associations should be investigated further and, when appropriate, taken into account when the mortality burden of smoking is investigated. This is Leon Thompson with a health report from East County Magazine on KNSJ.
A fire in Pine Valley on Tuesday showed why adequate staffing and proximity to a fire station are important factors for your safety when a fire occurs. When the Pine Valley Fire Station received a call at 1:21 in the morning Tuesday about a mobile home in flames on Old Highway 80, firefighters didn't have far to travel since the fire was right across the street from the fire station. The firefighters entered the mobile home, which was filled with heavy fire and smoke, and searched the residence. They found a man in a back bedroom and rescued him. The man did not suffer burns, but did require emergency medical treatment and was transported by helicopter to a local hospital. CAL FIRE Captain Kendall Bordiser says extra staffing at the fire station made a key difference, UT San Diego reports. The Pine Valley station normally has 3 firefighters assigned to it, but early Tuesday morning, there were 4 firefighters on assignment. Captain Bordiser concludes that played a key role in the crew being able to conduct the search and being able to find the occupant in the house. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Fox 5 TV in San Diego mistakenly ran a photo of President Barack Obama during a news report about an accused rapist. While anchor Kathleen Bade announced the only suspect in a sex assault at SDSU will not be charged, a photo of the president appeared on screen behind her with a caption that read, "No charges." Although newsroom editor Mike Willie told San Diego Times that he noticed the error immediately, the station did not correct its error or apologize initially. Williams stated, "They really don't do that when it's a small thing like that." But after media coverage of the gaffe, Fox ultimately issued an on-air correction 2 nights later, stating, "We regret the error." The station's website also carried a notice headlined, "An apology to our readers." So just how could a TV station manage to post the president's photo in place of a criminal suspect and slap the caption "No charges" across his image? Fox has insisted the incident was an accident, but has provided no explanation as to just how such outlandish errors could occur. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. Sheriff's detectives are investigating a drive-by shooting that occurred early Tuesday morning at 2:45 a.m. near the intersection of Bancroft Drive and Kenwood Drive in Spring Valley. The suspect vehicle, a white or silver BMW-type sedan, occupied by at least 2 black males, was last seen traveling north from the shooting scene towards State Route 94. The victim, a man, suffered multiple gunshot wounds, says Sergeant Pat McCoy. The victim was transported to a local hospital and is in stable condition, and his injuries are not believed to be life-threatening. The case remains under investigation, and it has not yet been verified if the incident is gang-related. If you have information on this case, you can call the Sheriff's Department at 858-565-5200. You can also remain anonymous and be eligible for up to a $1,000 reward for information leading to an arrest in this case by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
The countywide firefighter boot drive is the biggest and most important fundraiser of the year for the Byrne Institute. Firefighters from over 40 departments will grab their boots and congregate at nearly 100 intersections on March 4th. Virtually every fire department in the county is participating, so look for them in your neighborhood. Each year, they generously give their time to raise funds to support these programs and services, including sending burn-injured children to a special camp for burn survivors called Camp Beyond the Scars. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Recording from our studio in the East County Wellness Center here in El Cajon, my very special guest today is John Hartley, and John is the coordinator of Neighborhoods for Clean Elections in San Diego. John, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Tell us what Neighborhoods for Clean Elections is all about.
Well, it's a citizens group. Our goal is to empower our neighborhoods through clean elections. For the city of San Diego is where we want to start. And our goal is to put a clean elections initiative on the ballot for the presidential election year 2016 in the city of San Diego.
For those listeners who may not be aware, can you explain what clean elections are?
It's a funny term. A lot of people don't know what clean elections. Clean elections is public financing of elections. It's a system whereby people can earn the right for public money to run their campaigns.
And what would they have to do to earn that public money?
They would have to get the support of a large number of people in the district they're running in. Mm-hmm. In San Diego, it would be city council district, or if they're running for mayor in the whole city. They'd have to get a small donation from a large number of people to demonstrate that they're actually viable candidates.
Right. And then they have to agree not to accept money from, say, special interests or large individual donors. Is that correct?
Yes. If they earn the right for public funding, they can't spend any of their own money. They can't go solicit money from anyone else. So they're not beholden to anyone else. And if they win office, then they're actually free to represent each and every person in their district, not the special interest.
So it's a means of getting the special interests out of politics on a voluntary basis. And I understand that there would actually be a clean elections symbol that would appear on the ballot, so voters would know if somebody is running as a clean election candidate who has not accepted any of that special interest money or put, you know, large sums of their own money into the campaign.
Yes, that's what we've written an initiative. It's on our ballot, on our webpage, www.sdcleanelections.org. Mm-hmm. And we propose that the Clean Elections Program, if it passes, is administered by the Ethics Commission mm-hmm. in the city of San Diego.
Now, of course, this would not stop an opponent from refusing to be a clean elections candidate and taking millions of dollars from wherever they can get it. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's strictly voluntary. And our proposals for the city of San Diego, strictly voluntary. People could run it. If they're a millionaire, they could spend their own money. Or if they're mm-hmm. Connected to special interest, they could run in with special interest funding.
But people would know that. They'd be able to tell that on the ballot. Now, it seems like it would be really hard to win against somebody who's a millionaire. But what has actually happened in places where clean elections have become the law?
Well, we have clean elections in Arizona and Maine since 2000.
In the entire states there.
Yeah. And what happens, it levels the playing field. More women, people of color, elected to office, mm-hmm. and it limits the influence of special interest.
Yeah, it makes it so that ordinary people are able to run. Now, in San Diego, you've said the limit or the amount that you would get in public financing would be, what, about $125,000?
Yeah. Right now, it's around $100,000. We're thinking about increasing it to $125,000.
An old initiative.
Because it's been a while since we set that standard, and the funding's going up tremendously. Yes.
You've told me you ran for council before, and how much did you spend, or did you raise?
Well, the first time I ran for city council, I raised $3,000.
Yeah, which would make it very difficult
to very win, difficult. Obviously, even for a very wonderful candidate, that it's hard to win.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For a lot of ordinary people, $125,000 might sound like a lot of money. I mean, they might be very willing to sign and say, I won't take any special interest money if I can get that $125,000 of public money.
Well, you would have to earn that right, and mm-hmm. by getting 500 people in the city of San Diego to contribute $5 to the Clean Money Fund.
Yeah, which can be difficult to do. So.
Right. We set the bar pretty high.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to make it easy to get public funding.
You don't want 100 candidates qualifying for that or something. Very interesting. What would you say to those people who would say, why should taxpayers be paying candidates to run for office, essentially?
Well, we think the elections are so critical to our social world. Think about it. Those people in office make decisions that impact all of us, kids, families, seniors, that some public funding is a positive part of the process. Mm-hmm. We have no problems with it at all because we think it really empowers our neighborhoods and all people in our city of San Diego.
So it could mean more money flowing to neighborhoods and perhaps less flowing to, say, development projects that might favor special interests that gave a lot of money to the council, for example,
right.
The council candidates.
I mean, what we get is those people who contribute large amounts of money get a large amount of influence.
Right, whether it's business groups or labor groups or utilities, whoever it might be.
Right, and so we just feel that regular people should get support. So that everybody is treated equally by our elected representatives.
Now, with the Citizens United ruling, I guess the one monkey wrench that throws into it is that, you know, they've said that you can't stop an individual or an organization from putting money into a campaign if they choose an independent expenditure campaign. So, in theory, you could have your millionaire candidate running against a clean elections candidate, and let's say if the millionaire decides to run a smear campaign all over TV about the guy who's used up his $100,000, is there the potential still that an independent expenditure campaign could come forth to support a clean elections candidate, or would that violate the rule somehow?
Well, the way it is, the Supreme Court says that business are people, and so therefore they can contribute. And they also say that any individual can spend as much money as they want.
So if I want to run an independent expenditure campaign for somebody I like, regardless of whether they're a clean election campaign or not, somebody could still do that. This doesn't
–
you legally can't prevent that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's strictly voluntary. And as long as there's no communication and
right.
coordination –
Right. Candidate can't be involved, can't know about it,
right.
can't control that or have any ties to their campaign for
right.
that. Yeah.
So people now could still run as a traditional campaign with clean elections because clean mm-hmm. elections is a voluntary program.
Right. So what's the next step here? You're going to be starting a petition gathering campaign. How many signatures do you have to get?
With our initiative process in the city of San Diego, probably covers all the cities in California, we have about 6 months to run a campaign, a citizen's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You have to publicize for about 45 days, and then you have to get your signatures. In the city of San Diego, we need to get about 60,000 signatures.
That's a lot of signatures.
That's a lot of signatures. And we'll start publicizing probably November of 2015, and we'll start getting initiative going around January 2016. We got to turn our signatures in around June of mm-hmm. 2016.
Okay. If people want to get more information or they want to be on your mailing list for when these petitions become available, how would they get in touch with you?
We have a webpage. It's www.sdcleanelections.org. And we have everything on there. We have our initiative on there, our endorsements. They could reach me on there, John Hartley. I'm the coordinator. Mm-hmm. My phone number's there. And our email is there. That's how somebody could reach us.
Very good. And it should be noted that campaign financing is something that actually has been done in the past, public financing in some presidential elections. Last time around, both candidates opted not to take it, but it's been done in the past. So there is certainly precedent at a high level for that, as well as in the states of Maine and Arizona, as you've noted.
Absolutely, at the presidential level. Also, the city of New York has clean elections,
mm-hmm.
and now the city of Albuquerque, New Mexico, has clean elections.
Very good. Well, John, I want to thank you very much for joining us here today from the Neighborhoods for Clean Elections campaign, and we appreciate you taking the time to join us here on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I'm honored to be here. Thanks.
The ACLU has filed a lawsuit charging that Homeland Security and the U.S. Customs and Border Protection agencies have failed to respond to Freedom of Information requests for information on the Border Patrol's roving patrol operations, during which agents stop and detain Southern Californians as far as 100 miles north of the Mexico border. The lawsuit was filed in federal court this week by the ACLU Foundation of San Diego and Imperial Counties, the ACLU Foundation of Southern California, and the University of California Irvine School of Law Immigrant Rights Clinic. Mitra Ebadohali, an attorney with the ACLU Foundation of San Diego, has this to say. Many Americans are unaware that the U.S. Border Patrol operates so-called roving patrols far away from the border itself, deep into the interior of the United States. In the course of these operations, federal agents routinely disregard the legal limitations on their authority and violate the civil rights of California residents and visitors. Yet DHS refuses to hold agents accountable and ignores basic requests for information about these abusive practices, she adds. Reports of Border Patrol agents stopping farm workers and local residents in Fallbrook, 70 miles north of the U.S.-Mexico border, and Laguna Beach, which is almost 90 miles north of the border, indicate the extent to which Californians are targeted by this far-reaching federal law enforcement activity. On July 3rd of last year, the ACLU and faculty members in the UC Irvine School of Law Immigrants' Rights Clinic submitted a Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, request to both federal agencies seeking records related to the Border Patrol's extensive but largely opaque roving patrol operations throughout Southern California. To date, neither agency has responded to the FOIA. Last year, the UC Irvine School of Law International Justice Clinic submitted a report to the United Nations about excessive use of force and lack of transparency by the Border Patrol. According to the ACLU's press release, roving patrols have long been associated with civil rights violations, and abuses are not limited to the Southwest, as prior FOIA lawsuits have shown. In 2011, the ACLU obtained records of Border Patrol operations in upstate New York. They showed that the vast majority of stops did not target recent border crossers and occurred far from the border. Only 1% resulted in removal proceedings, and many stops involved clear violations of agency arrest guidelines as well as the Constitution, including improper reliance on race as a basis for questioning passengers and arrests of lawfully present individuals, the ACLU says. Another ACLU lawsuit related to roving patrol stop data is currently pending in Arizona. Adrian Wong, staff attorney with the ACLU Foundation of Southern California, claims the Border Patrol is operating as a rogue agency, claiming extra-constitutional powers that extend far from any border and operating with no effective oversight. But Border Patrol agents are not above the law and must be held accountable just like any other public official, the lawyer adds. The ACLU also contends that Homeland Security and Border Patrol fail to adequately collect basic stop data that would allow the agencies to detect, deter, and respond to rights abuses, even though such data collection is an accepted law enforcement best practice used by other federal agencies. The agencies also regularly ignore FOIA requests and refuse to make public even the basic information that is collected to allow the public to evaluate Border Patrol activities. The ACLU's Border Litigation Project, with offices in San Diego and Tucson, is now working on a coordinated FOIA strategy to lift the veil of secrecy. KPBS, which has also reported on the ACLU lawsuit, indicates that the Border Patrol has declined to comment on the allegations raised by the ACLU in this case. Reporting for KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service.
During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas wildfire and emergency alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes celebrations of Black History Month rock and roll concerts, a star party, a sweetheart dance, and more. Stay tuned for all of these events and much, much more from East County Magazine.
As part of Grossmont College's commemoration of Black History Month, the documentary film American Revolution, The Evolution of Grace Lee Boggs, will be shown on February 19th at 12:30 p.m. at Griffin Gate, Building 60. The film introduces viewers to Boggs' lifetime of vital thinking and action, traversing the major U.S. social movements of the last century, from labor to civil rights to black power, feminism, and beyond. Admission is free and open to the public.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa presents Murder at the Howard Johnson's each Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in February, with a final performance on March 1st. This suspense comedy features love, betrayal, and mayhem in a plot about an ill-fated love triangle and three botched murder plots. For tickets and details, visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
For an up-close view of stars and planets through high-powered telescopes, you're invited to join a star party at the Oak Oasis County Preserve in Lakeside on Saturday, February 21st from 5:30 until 8:30 p.m. Also learn the science and legends of the night sky, as well as enjoying a campfire, s'mores, and music. Oak Oasis is located at 12620 Wildcat Canyon Road in Lakeside. The evening can be chilly, so bring a blanket and bundle up.
For the past 40 years, Air Supply has been performing in concerts around the world, including their most famed hit, All Out of Love. They have performed in Vegas and at Australia Centennial for Prince Charles and Princess Diana. Now, on February 20th and 21st at 8 p.m., Air Supply will take stage at Sequans Live in Up Close Theater. You can find details or reserve tickets at sequan.com.
A Western Sweetheart Dance featuring country artist Patrick Trampas will be held at the Lakeside Rodeo Grounds on February 21st from 5 until 10 p.m., with entertainment starting at 6 p.m. The coronation for Miss Rodeo Lakeside will also be held. For tickets, visit lakesiderodeo.com.
The Bert Turetsky Spring Bass and Ensemble will perform Sunday, February 22nd at 3 p.m. at Mission Trails Regional Park. This free concert is sponsored by the Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation. For more information, you can visit mtrp.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions. The documentary film Creating Community, Hidden Colors will be shown at San Diego State's Love Library, room 430 and 431, on Wednesday, February 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. The film relates the untold story of people of color around the globe and discusses why the contributions of African and Aboriginal people have often been left out of the pages of history.
Rock and roll singer Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band will perform in concert at San Diego State University's Open Air Theater on Wednesday, February 25th at 7:30 p.m. Best known for the hit song Night Moves, Seger has been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and the Songwriters Hall of Fame. For details, visit sdsu.edu.
Author Hamsay Warfa will be at the San Diego State University on Thursday, February 26th from 7 to 9 p.m. to share his book, America, Here I Come, A Somali Refugee's Quest for Hope. The story narrates his escape from a civil war that claimed the lives of over 2 million people in Somalia to becoming a respected author here in the United States. The program will be held in the Arts and Letters Room 101.
In honor of Black History Month, the Grossmont College Chorus will perform a chorale reading of Margaret Walker's poem, For My People, on Thursday, February 26th at 7 p.m. The program will be held in Building 26, Room 220. The event is free and open to the public.
St. Patrick's Day weekend festivities in East County are slated for Sunday, March 15th in downtown El Cajon at Main Street and Magnolia. Choose from a half marathon, a 5K run, or green mile competition to compete for a large cash prize pot, medals, and free drinks after the races at the St. Patrick's Beer and Wine Festival. There's also a leprechaun challenge for racers dressed like leprechauns vying to win a costume contest. For details, visit stpatrickdayshalf.com. If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
Today I'm interviewing Don Harrison, author of Schlepping Through the American West, There's a Jewish Story Everywhere. My guest, a seasoned journalist, is also editor and publisher of San Diego Jewish World, an online newspaper that serves the San Diego Jewish community and serves Jews around the world. So welcome, Don. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you so much, Raina, for having me.
Let's start with your history. I know that since 1986, you've been writing Jewish stories about events, people, and places not only in San Diego, but in the rest of the country and the world. How did you get started writing Jewish stories?
Well, I had been a journalist before. I had been the political writer for the San Diego Union. And then I got into public relations and found myself missing journalism. About the same time, my daughter, Sandy, had her bat mitzvah. And I had come from a family that wasn't all that involved with the Jewish community, and I never had a bar mitzvah as a kid. And they have a ceremony where they pass down the Torah from generation to generation. And as I watched it go briefly into my arms and then to her arms, I thought, wow, she's inherited a heritage that I don't have. I want to learn more about this. And I thought, well, I'm a reporter, I'm a journalist. The best way I can learn is if I start writing stories about the Jewish community. And I volunteered to write stories for one of the Jewish newspapers, the San Diego Jewish Press Heritage, which ultimately I became the editor-in-chief and later the publisher of.
And do you remember your first Jewish story?
Yes. Actually, it was a trialogue among three rabbis from the different movements. One was a rabbi from the Orthodox Beth Jacob. His name was Rabbi Langer. The other one was a rabbi from the conservative Tiferet Israel, and that was Aaron Gold. And the third one was from the Reform congregation Temple Emmanuel, and that was Rabbi Marty Lawson. And they held forth about the differences among the movements, and it ran as a front-page story, not in the Heritage. This was before I started with the Heritage. It was in the competitive paper, which was then called, I think, San Diego Israel Today or something like that.
Okay, so you fell in love with writing those stories.
Yeah, it was great. It really was. And ever since, I've always looked for Jewish angles to stories. And as a regional newspaper might ask for what's the El Cajon angle or the East County angle, I ask what's the Jewish angle.
Well, in Schlepping Through the American West, you and your grandson go on a 3,600-mile round-trip odyssey from San Diego to Alberta, Canada, discovering Jewish stories and links. How did that trip get started, and why the American West?
Well, I think it's kind of fascinating that here in San Diego, we have two northbound interstate freeways that actually cross, I-5, which goes north along the coast, and I-15. And I thought, well, that makes for an interesting route, wouldn't it, if you were to go up the I-15 all the way to Canada and then perhaps across and then come down to the 5 and end up at the same place. And I don't know why I became fixated on that, but I thought, gee, that would be a fun trip. And I asked Shore if he would like to go with me and see what we could find. And Shore's my grandson, and he said yes.
So when you took this trip, did you have it preset where you'd go or how you would dig up these stories, or was that spontaneous?
Well, it was a little of each. In some cases, we actually wrote ahead and knew that we wanted to go there, mm-hmm. and hoped that we could arrange interviews. In other places, it was just serendipitous. For example, one story I wrote was at an Indian reservation, the Blackfoot Indian Reservation, and we went into a trading post. I happened to pick up a book there that was written by one of the members of the Blackfoot Indians, and found it so fascinating that I decided to devote a column or a story to that.
And you found a Jewish angle for that.
Well, the Jewish angle was the comparison, because they believe that, for example, mice can talk. They don't necessarily believe, but in their legends, the mice talk. And they also have ceremonies where they have their tobacco pipe and they wave it in the directions of the four directions and up and down. Uh-huh. And I found similarities to Judaism in that. We have in Judaism in the Torah, the story of a donkey who was carrying a passenger and is stopped by an angel of the Lord and won't move, and the fellow riding him starts whacking him, and the donkey looks up and says, "Why are you hitting me? You know, haven't I always been good?" And so it's not all that amazing to have a story about a talking animal in a religious text. And similarly, we have a ceremony in Judaism where we wave our lulavs during the holiday of Sukkot, and to the different directions. So it was a nice place to find a comparison.
Interesting. So the book is both a guidebook and it's a collection of tales. Could you share with us right now a little bit of your favorite tale?
Well, I don't know if it's my favorite.
What are your favorites?
One of my favorite. But, one of the places that we went to was in Idaho. Remember, we're going along the Interstate 15, and we found out that the town of Blackfoot, Idaho, had the Potato Museum.
Okay.
And we thought, gee, what? That would be interesting. Uh-huh. Potato Museum. So I'll start a little bit of it. About the time that movie star Marilyn Monroe converted to Judaism in association with her marriage to playwright Arthur Miller, potato farmers and marketers in Idaho were talking about how beautiful a woman she was. Quote, "She's the kind of woman who would look good in anything, even a potato sack," said one. "Say, that's a brilliant idea," said another. "Let's see if we can get her to pose for our advertising campaign." They did, and she did, producing a memorable image of Monroe in a burlap bag. As was clear to everyone, she was outstanding in her field. The joke there being that she's standing in a potato field.
Oh,
the Monroe,
I didn't even get that. I got it now. Thank you.
The Monroe image is just one of the exhibits of the Idaho Potato Museum, which shares crowded quarters in a former railroad depot with the Blackfoot Chamber of Commerce. Here one can learn about the history of the Idaho potatoes, as well as about some of the innovations that have changed the way potatoes are planted and harvested. There are also interesting potato-based collections, such as postage stamps from around the world, featuring potatoes or their lore, an assemblage of Mr. Potato Head toys, and a one-of-a-kind souvenir, a potato signed by former U.S. Vice President Dan Quayle.
Oh, wonderful. It was really fun to read.
Do you remember Dan Quayle and his famous potato gaffe, and he wanted to put an extra E on it?
Yes.
So that's why they got him to sign the potato, and he was a good enough sport to do it.
Great. I know that one of your readers, Rabbi Ben Kamen, mm-hmm. he called you not only the ultimate wandering Jew, but he said you're a highly valued wondering Jew. What other topics besides the themes that you've mentioned, potatoes and history, what other topics do you wonder about in Schlepping Through the American West? What topics do you think are relevant to everyone, no matter what their faith is?
Well, I think most of them are. There were perhaps one or two stories that you might say were almost exclusively Jewish. I dealt with a Jewish synagogue, obviously, and a Jewish cemetery in two different chapters. But the rest of them really were about Americana. Mm-hmm. And I look at these stories as tapestries, and through these tapestries, there might be a Jewish thread here and there. I try to focus, on the Jewish thread, but as well to tell the story of the place. So, for example, we went to the buffalo preserve up in Montana, the bison preserve, I should say properly, because they aren't really buffaloes, and talked about how Theodore Roosevelt was involved in the conservation of these incredible creatures who were slaughtered, unfortunately, during the 19th century and who faced extinction, and told about what the experience is like to drive through the National Bison Range and to see these creatures and have them come right up to your car. And at the same time, wove through it the interesting fact, at least to me, that Moise, M-O-I-E-S-E, is the name of the town that the National Bison Range is in. And of course, I drew the conclusion that Moise was a biblical name or from Moses. And found out that it was actually the name of the Native American who owned the area and who had been given his name by a church. And so my conclusion actually worked out that there was this Jewish thread running through it. And I talked about Theodore Roosevelt and Moses both being conservationists. And there's a famous Jewish story, we call him Midrashim, about Moses who had a sheep that wandered away from the flock, and he followed the sheep and he found the sheep drinking from the water, and he realized that the reason that the sheep had left was because he was so thirsty, and he felt sorry for the sheep. And so when he retrieved him, instead of being angry at him, he put him on his shoulders and he carried him back to the flock. And according to the story, God saw this and he says, if he treats the sheep so well, he'll also treat the Israelites well, and he'll be the leader. And so these kinds of stories, you try to weave together as you go to places that are of general sightseeing interest.
It really does sound like a tapestry.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the global stage for a moment. I know, a very hot topic. In any way, does all the unrest and violence in the Middle East affect your writing, your perspective, anything that you're doing?
It's an interesting question. When I say in the subtitle of the book that there's a Jewish story everywhere, I have, you might say, three reasons why I'm able to say that. Israel is one. I mean, everybody in the world, every country in the world, either has relations or refuses to have relations with Israel. And so that offers one, you might say, possible range of stories. And the other two kinds of stories is the Bible, which I've just mentioned. The Hebrew scriptures are known throughout the world and so forth. And the third thing is that Jews have been a very peripatetic people. We traveled everywhere to a large degree because we were merchants and we would open up new trade routes and open up stores and so forth. And so you can always find from those three themes, some sort of a story. And occasionally the story may well be about Israel. In fact, let's see, I guess it's in Rancho San Diego or El Cajon, I guess, is there's big skyline church. And if you go there, I mean, they're very Israel oriented. They have a wall inside their atrium that looks like the Kotel, the Wailing Wall or the Western Wall of Jerusalem, where parishioners can stick notes into it. And they have two big pillars in that atrium that are supposed to be the pillars of Solomon. And it's an example of how important those scriptures are, not only to Jews, but to the Western religions.
Wonderful. You really have a lot to show us that's already been there. We haven't looked at it quite that way. How about East County? Are there any stories that particularly focus in East County that you'd like to share with us?
Well, just briefly, there are some that I've always enjoyed. In La Mesa, for example, one of the landmarks there is Mount Nebo. And, of course, in the Bible, Mount Nebo was the place where Moses looked out over the promised land and then died, and he wasn't allowed to actually go to the promised land. I always wondered about that name, like, gee, you get to look out, but you don't get to come down the mountain. But I guess the developers were thinking about the other Israelites who would actually go into the promised land and had a great view of it.
So La Mesa is the promised land.
Well, they were, as far as the developers, there was a fellow named Sherman Grable who was a Methodist, and he used that metaphor. In Santee, at the Santee Lakes, it's one of my favorite places to go walking, and I draw inspiration from the way the different species get along. I have pictures of pelicans and cormorants sharing the same rock, and pictures of egrets and herons fishing from the same shore, and osprey and another egret up in the same tree. And so you get this sort of sense of a multiculturalism at the Santee Lakes. And yet at the same time, you also see flocks of ducks together, of mud hens together. And so they have their separate cultures, but they also mingle together. And I think of that as a metaphor.
Yeah, I love that metaphor.
And then finally in Lakeside, the old Lakeside hotel was at one point owned by the whole rancho was owned by Adolph Levi, who was a fellow in Julian, who, if you ever go to the Julian drugstore, there's a plaque on the drugstore that it was once owned by him. But he also purchased land, and so that area was owned by the Levi family. And so it's just another strand that runs through these tapestries.
Great. Thanks for sharing those.
Sure.
Interesting. One last question. What are you writing next? Will it be more travels from a Jewish American grandfather, or will it be something entirely different?
Well, I have another book that I'm collating now. It's called Schlepping Over the High Seas.
Okay. And more schlepping.
I've done a lot of cruising, and just as I have done in the American West, whenever I get to a port, I try to find the Jewish story. And of course, there are many Jewish stories, on the ships. And so these are tapestries. They are stories about cruising, about the kinds of people you might meet on a cruise ship, about, places you might go or the cruise ship might take you. But I always try to find that little Jewish thread within those stories.
And when do you think it'll be available?
Well, I'm guessing sometime next year. It's a matter now of pulling stories from, I've been a journalist for over 50 years, and I'm trying to go back and to find some of those stories that meet the theme. And that takes a little while, and maybe I'll go on a cruise or two between now and then.
Oh, you'll have to go on a cruise. Well, we look forward to seeing it. Our time is up, Don, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I greatly enjoyed the interview.
For more information on Don Harrison and his work, please visit sdjewishworld.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Leon Thompson with a health report on East County Magazine. February is Heart Healthy Month, and the United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has launched an effort to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes in the United States by 2017. The CDC is encouraging you to know your blood pressure, and if it's high, to make control your goal. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is a leading cause of heart disease and stroke. More than 67 million Americans have high blood pressure. People with high blood pressure are 4 times more likely to die from a stroke and 3 times more likely to die from heart disease compared to those with normal blood pressure. High blood pressure often shows no signs or symptoms, which is why having your blood pressure checked regularly is important. It's easy to get your blood pressure checked. You can get screened at your doctor's office and drugstore, or even check it yourself at home using a home blood pressure monitor. If you know you have high blood pressure, here are ways to help get it under control. Ask your doctor what your blood pressure should be. Set a goal to lower your pressure with your doctor and talk about how you can reach your goal. reduce sodium intake. Salt and many prepared foods are high in sodium. Most Americans consume too much sodium, which can raise blood pressure. The Million Hearts Healthy Eating and Lifestyle Resource Center has heart-healthy, low-sodium recipes and meal plans. Quit smoking, and if you don't smoke, don't start, since smoking can raise blood pressure. If your doctor prescribes blood pressure medications, take it as directed. Set a timer on your phone to remember to take your medicine at the same time each day. If you're having trouble paying for your medicines or if you are having side effects, ask your doctor for help. For more information about high blood pressure, it's available at cdc.gov/bloodpressure. You can also visit millionhearts.hhs.gov.
A class action lawsuit has been filed against the UT San Diego, alleging that telemarketing operations for the newspaper violated the Telephone Consumer Protection Act by dialing people on their cell phones without permission and trying to sell them subscriptions. The complaint alleges that the calls were made by an automatic telephone dialing system, a practice that is banned unless consumers give consent or in cases of emergency. The San Diego Reader reports that Amanda Stone is one of those named in the class action lawsuits, alleging she received automated calls on her cell phone in January without permission, asking her to buy a $15 subscription. Those calls could prove costly mistakes for the UT, since it could face fines of $500 for every single call made in violation of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, is reporting approximately 200 close calls in the past year between aircraft and drones. That includes two cases of drones flying too close to airport runways in San Diego County, one in East County near Gillespie Field in El Cajon, and a second in Carlsbad. Now, one San Diego drone maker and seller has devised technology to help solve that problem, 10 News reports. Easy Drone has devised software called geofencing technology. Using GPS, it maps a circle around airports and will disable drones that cross the line to prevent them from endangering planes. The FAA is issuing warnings to offenders while it finalizes new rules that should be in place by year's end. U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer has called on the FAA to crack down on drones after two near misses at Kennedy International Airport in New York and another New York airport where a flight carrying President Barack Obama had recently landed. Senator Schumer called the near misses scary and likened the situation to the Wild West, adding, "It must stop." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
A class action lawsuit has been filed against the UT San Diego, alleging that telemarketing operations for the newspaper violated the Telephone Consumer Protection Act by dialing people on their cell phones without permission and trying to sell them subscriptions. The complaint alleges that the calls were made by an automatic telephone dialing system, a practice that is banned unless consumers give consent or in cases of emergency. The San Diego Reader reports that Amanda Stone is one of those named in the class action lawsuits, alleging she received automated calls on her cell phone in January without permission, asking her to buy a $15 subscription. Those calls could prove costly mistakes for the UT, since it could face fines of $500 for every single call made in violation of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.